This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
At 425 on Grant and Danny, forget should Chase Young be at practice or not. Is there a correlation between his lack of involvement in the offseason over the years and him not living up to expectations to this point? We'll dive into that right here on The Fan coming up in a little over 25 minutes. But right now it is time to give away tickets to see Bert Kreischer as promised. Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're going to win two tickets to see Birdie Boy, Tops Off World Tour, Saturday the 2nd of December, Eagle Bank Arena. Tickets on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events, courtesy of Monumental Sports. Congrats to the winner. If you don't win these tickets, maybe get back in line and try to win the LIV Golf Tournament tickets we're giving away in 1 hour at 5 o'clock here on Grant and Danny. Beltway Blitz is juicy today. The NBA playoffs ongoing. The Commanders is a stadium, a possibility in D.C., over at Poplar Point, and the Nationals, which is where we'll start. Bobby Blanco of MassinSports.com joins us right now. Bobby, why don't we begin with Soto coming home and bashing the baseball? Three hits, a 440-foot home run. What'd you think last night?
Yeah, that was a typical Juan Soto things, right? I mean, 3-for-4, the home run, a couple of doubles, and a walk. I forget the walk. That's a very Juan Soto thing for him to do. You know, it started off with a nice ovation from the crowd. He tipped his hat and he patted his chest, you know, on his heart for a, you know, I appreciate you, I love you guys type of thing. And then he did what he does. I know he's had a slow start this season with the Padres, but we've seen that before with the Nationals, right? He doesn't really get hot until June and July. And here we are right before Memorial Day. He's getting hot. And, of course, he's at Nats Park.
What have we seen from Mackenzie Gore? Obviously, the stuff is so good. I thought sometimes the other guy gets paid to play too, and Xander Bogaerts hitting that opposite field home run off and was actually just pretty good hitting. So overall, you know, not a terrible outing, but it hasn't – didn't feel like he has turned the corner yet here, Bobby, in terms of applying some of that stuff. What are your thoughts on Gore?
Yeah, his stuff is electric. Dave Martinez said that multiple times last night, and, you know, I even saw reports coming from the Padres side from Yu Darvish and Bob Melvin saying that, man, his stuff looks really good. But, yeah, I think you're right. The home run to Bogaerts, he said that was a good pitch, just better hitting. He's okay with that. But you know what? Right now we're seeing he's got the good stuff, but his pitch count is getting really high early in outings. He's only gone 4, 5 1/3, and now 4 2/3 last night. He even went only four innings earlier this month against Chicago over the last couple of starts. So his pitch count is getting high. Davey pushed him to 103 last night. It's just by location. You know, he's got to get it in the strike zone. He's got to get guys to swing at his stuff. And we've seen all season long, the Nationals are okay with pitchers putting balls in play. That's what they want. They trust their defense is a lot better than last year. They trust them to get out. McKenzie hasn't been doing that recently. He knows that. He's got to get more in the strike zone.
Lane Thomas is absolutely killing the ball. Last seven games, he's hitting about 350 with a OPS over 1,000. Last 15 games, he's over 1,000 OPS, hitting about 340. I mean, what has gotten into Lane Thomas? And I just want to remind everyone that he was acquired for John Lester straight up.
Yeah, never forget that part. Never, ever forget that part, that it was John Lester straight up, and then John Lester retired like 2 months later. And here we go, Lane Thomas. It's May. I mean, he's been doing this all month of May. He entered this month hitting only like 260. Now over his, I think it's like 21 games over the month of May. He's hitting .333. All of his home runs have come this month. He's got RBIs. He's sitting on top of the lineup right now. It used to be Alex Call. Davey moved him down the lineup and Lane back up to the leadoff spot. He's a fastball hitter. He gets his fastball. He's able to drive it, but he's doing a lot better hitting the off-speed stuff this season and taking advantage of what pitchers are giving him.
There's just not much power from Meneses and Smith to this point. I kind of don't really have a good question about that. Three homers combined here through 90 games between those couple of guys. We're approaching 400 plate appearances for both of them with only three bombs. You just need more from them, yeah?
Absolutely, especially with Joey. I mean, I think they brought in Dom Smith to kind of provide that power. With Meneses, it was more of like, can he maintain his success that he had at the end of last season, right? And we saw early on he kind of struggled, but then he started to find his swing a little bit. The power hasn't really come yet. Only a couple of homers, I think, on the season so far. He seemed to have his swing coming up, and then, good news, bad news, he landed on the paternity list last week for the first the birth of his firstborn son, which is exciting and all, but, he just like one of those things like, bad timing from a baseball standpoint, great timing on a life standpoint, bad timing on a baseball standpoint. Hopefully he finds his swing coming soon. I really believe once the weather gets warmer, I mean, they played in some cold weather games in April, not just here at home, but like in Colorado, San Francisco. It was unseasonably warm in Anaheim when they played the Angels, Minnesota. Like, it's just, I'm not making that excuse. It was just kind of like odd scheduling for the Nationals that they ran into some cold weather. Hopefully when the weather heats up, so will the bats.
All right, so give us a little preview of the next couple nights then, or I guess tonight and then tomorrow in a matinee. But the next 2 days against the Padres, Trevor Williams on the hill to try to get even in this series this evening.
Yeah, Trevor Williams goes tonight. I mean, he's been, I think everyone's calling him the bulldog of this rotation. He's given them solid outings. I mean, he's not here to be, a one or two starter in this rotation. He's here to be the four starter and eat up innings. He's been able to do that. He's giving this team at least a chance every time he goes out. Quality starts, giving them at least five, sometimes six innings. That's what you want. I mean, unfortunately, McKenzie didn't get very deep last night, so we'll have to see. Davey was able to stay away from the top three guys in the back end of the bullpen, but he had to use a handful of relievers last night. So hopefully Trevor Williams can give them six tonight. And then, you get Carl Edwards Jr., Hunter Harvey, and Kyle Finnegan in the back end if the Nats have a lead. And then Jake Irvin goes tomorrow afternoon for the finale. He's been pitching, really well, all things considered, as a rookie over his first couple of MLB starts. His last couple of outings have been not so great, but, kind of the traditional rookie struggles for him. I'm interested to see if he's able to bounce back, find the success that he had early on over his first two starts.
Washington Nationals insider, Masson Sports, is Bobby Blanco, Bobby_Blanco on Twitter. And next time Ryan tries to book you for the show in the bathroom, tell him to kick rocks. tell him he can meet you outside in the hallway and we'll give you a minute.
Talk to me like an adult.
Yeah, give me like 2 seconds, dude, and let me wash my hands, and I'll be out there. No, it was all good. I appreciate the time, guys.
Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you.
It's a show's first urinal booking. Let's hit the Wizard sounder, please. Our buddy Ava Wallace covers those Wizards. We'll talk some NBA. But first, Ava, can you confirm that the Wizards will have a general manager before the draft?
I cannot confirm that, but things sure seem to be picking up, that's for sure.
What do we know on that front?
We know that they moved to the interview stage, which about a week ago, we walked into the lottery room, kind of everybody on the Wizards seat there, thinking that they had not reached that. And we walked out knowing that they had interviewed, at the very least, Trajan Langdon, the general manager for the Pelicans. And then ESPN was the first one to report afterwards that the Clippers' Michael Winger has also interviewed. So Ted Leonsis there hosting people at his home, potential candidates. I've been told that he's out there so that people aren't so appraised of the folks' comings and goings at Capital One Arena there in the middle of Chinatown. But things are moving along.
Ava, your colleague Ben Golliver does a great job covering the NBA, and I've always liked him. He's a very, very good writer, and it seems like a really good dude. I don't know him personally, but he's in my doghouse right now. He tweeted after the lottery ball saga debacle.
Yeah.
He's like, just so you guys know,
FYI,
Victor Wembanyama almost was a Wizard, and it's amazing that he wasn't because they had such a great chance to get him. Why did he do that? Like, I don't want to know that Jennifer Lawrence wanted to date me after the fact. Like, I'm married now.
You have to face the Wizards fans,
That was tough. Like, I guess just that's my question.
That one hurt.
That one hurt.
No, it was, you know, Brett Greenberg, the assistant general manager, who was in the drawing room for the Wizards. I saw him right afterwards, and I kind of just went up to him and was like, six numbers. And he just, oh, man, poor guy. He just looked at me and kept saying, what can you do? What can you do? Like, he just had the shock of his life. Yeah, that 54% chance was a little bit of a salt in the wound there for the Wizards. Just a really terrible streak of bad luck.
So, Ava,
Real quick, before you move on. Mm-hmm. And I apologize to Danny.
No, don't you dare apologize to me.
Can you I had a buddy of mine on the phone today who's been a Wizards season ticket holder forever, until very recently, actually. But he was like, do you know how different the world would be for the Wizards if they would have won the lottery? If, like, that 57% chance came home.
Yeah.
He's like, you guys would be talking about the NBA every day on the show until the season started. And I was like, unequivocally, no doubt about it.
For the next 5 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How different would it be, do you think, right now in this town, had they have won the lottery last week?
It is world-shifting. I mean, we were kind of sitting there at the lottery talking about all the – I mean, you guys understand this – all the, like, local media people who have been made by the number one pick, and especially a number one pick like that, coming to their city. Like, careers are made by that. Entire landscapes change. Like, you'd have national reporters kind of swarming this place. Summer League would be a huge deal. I would be writing, no matter if there was news or not, I would be writing every day. Like, it just changes everything for the city. And it's like, and you know, you talk about the Wizards in the lottery, and it's not even like, have they had bad luck or whatever. It's like, it's not even that they haven't won, it's that they've actively moved back. And this year they didn't move back, so that was good. But more times than not, they're falling down in the lottery, and that just is just, it's just brutal.
So, Ava, I live in fear just in general, by the way. I think correctly so. I think that's the best way to survive, but that's beside the point. I am afraid that Ted is watching these NBA playoffs with his feet on his desk, looking what the Miami Heat are doing and going, see, my way does work. Now, I know they're not the same, but I don't know that he knows that. Miami basically was like 3 minutes of good basketball away from losing to the Bulls in the play-in tournament. And now, with kind of like a mediocre, listless regular season, without a true superstar, again, for the regular season type stuff, and they're going to the NBA Finals in all likelihood. I'm terrified that he's going, see, I found the one thing that they're doing it the way that I'm doing it, even though they're not, but I'm worried that he sees that. Did that question make sense?
Yes. I don't think there is an owner in the NBA, though, or a, you know, general manager or whatever, who equates themselves to Pat Riley. Like, I do think Ted Lee, I'm pretty confident in saying, I haven't asked him directly, but I'm pretty confident in saying Ted Leo just understands that's a special thing. You know, everyone always says Miami's built, the Spurs is built. There are certain teams who can kind of get away with doing stuff. But I do think, like, if there's something he could take from that, it's that you don't necessarily need the highest picks every year, that you can make do, that you can at least earn a living in this league, you know, so to speak, without absolutely striking gold. And I think you're right about that, but you need the right people in place and you need a good culture in your organization. So I think he hears things like, you guys asked me the last time I was on about Corey Kispert talking about accountability and all those things. Like, I think Ted Leonsis just understands that there are major changes that need to be made. If he makes them, I don't know, but I think he sees more and more those changes need to happen.
Timetable on decisions for Kuzma and Porzingis?
Nothing set until GM. And even then, you got to think about all the people in the front office whose contracts run through the end of June. So it's going to be a while, and probably more around the start of free agency. I know Porzingis is still talking with the Wizards, and you know, those extension talks are kind of, even though they've certainly cooled off, there's still things to be done on both sides, for sure.
Ava, keep crushing it. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
She's the best. Ava Wallace, Washington Post. Let's keep it moving. Blitz time with the Commanders and our buddy Eric Flack, an award-winning reporter over at WUSA TV9. Eric, why don't we begin with something you've been working here recently, this idea that all of a sudden the Poplar Point location could be home to the Commanders. They could build a stadium right over here by Nats Park. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's not true. I did a piece back in September of last year that did confirm that the Commanders certainly kicked the tires on that Poplar Point location. But because of environmental and remediation concerns, it's just really impossible. Now, the city is getting control of that land back from the federal government, much like the situation they're dealing with at RFK. And there was a request for proposals to develop that area that had a lot of people buzzing. It could be some sort of a sleeper sort of location. But I confirmed today with the Department of Office and Planning of Economic Development there in D.C. that that request for proposals is still completely unrelated to any sort of stadium talks. And checking in with my sources, I think they have moved on from Poplar Point as of now.
Could they move back to it? I guess the reason I asked that, Eric, is, you know, I just think RFK is so complicated. And it may prove too complicated because I think timeliness is of the essence here. I don't know that this Harris Group will have a honeymoon that lasts until 2031 or whenever. I think if they're going to do something, they need to dangle carrots in front of the fans to try to win them back, other than the short-term bump that's coming from him not being Dan Snyder. Is there any chance to revisit that, or is it not feasible?
I don't think the land is big enough, Danny. I don't think there's enough space there. There is about 110 acres total. You're talking about about half the size of the RFK site. And I don't think all that land is really fully developable. You know, there's a lot of marshland down there. Look, the location is great. Can you imagine having Nats Park, Audi Field, and the new Commander Stadium all within, like, eye shot of each other right there on the Anacostia River? It'd be amazing. But I just don't think the land fits what they're trying to do, considering the condition it's in for development.
What's your thought on the RFK site?
I mean, I think the RFK site is totally back in play, and I think it's never had more momentum than it has right now. I mean, you have people like Councilmember Kenya McDuffie who have embraced this. And remember, he is the head of the Economic Planning Committee for D.C. Council. So D.C. needs this business. They need the economic shot in the arm. The problem is going to be that, regardless of whether you believe that $1.5 billion number that was thrown out in the Harris prospectus that Virginia could pony up, Virginia is still the odds-on favorite to give the most amount of money to the team to build a stadium. So if you start, you know, getting into they're having trouble putting together the deal to buy the Commanders, they're heavily leveraged, they're having to pull in all these investors, and then you're going to expect them to take less money than they could get for a new stadium, I think that may be a challenge. But I think from a practical standpoint, from all the stars aligning standpoint, with movement in Congress to start looking at giving this land back, with the lobbying that's going on from the NFL, from the team, with Congress to start this ball moving, I don't think it's ever been more possible, more feasible that we could end up back at RFK than it is right now.
Eric, I feel like Maryland is sort of generally doing the Forrest Gump from the boat wave. You know, like anytime stadium talk comes up, it's like, hi, we're going to invest in a shopping mall or something near FedEx. This is maybe my own personal deal, but other people's minds work differently. For me, I have an association. When I go on Stadium Street or Bright Street or whatever, I had a terrible time. I need to not be back there ever again.
Yeah.
Not everybody works that way, and that's totally fine. But I think just for a new beginning type deal, they can't be there. Could they be somewhere else in Maryland, though, kind of not too far from National Harbor? Where is Maryland in all this?
Now, that's an interesting point. That's an interesting point. And they have kicked around ideas, meaning Maryland, the collective they, have kicked around different locations in that National Harbor area. You know, I think, listen, Governor Moore has been, I think, even more full-throated in his support of a Commander Stadium than even I think Governor Hogan was. I mean, Governor Hogan was kind of like, well, they're here now, so they want to build another stadium, go for it. I mean, I think Governor Moore is much more aggressive in saying we are going to work to keep this team. And as you know, the stadium fund in Maryland gives out tons of cash to Baltimore. I mean, the M&T Bank, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, there's huge public financing arms of that. So I never got why they wouldn't give the Commanders money when they're willing, especially now that Snyder's gone, when they're willing to dole out money to Baltimore. So keep that in mind. But I do agree there is almost like a stink on everything from the Snyder era. And unfortunately, you know, for a lot of people like yourself, it does include that stadium.
Eric Flack, an award-winning investigative reporter for WSA TV 9 and extremely handsome gentleman. Thank you, sir.
Really good hair.
Appreciate you.
Yep.
Appreciate it, guys.
He's got that high-definition friendly look. You know what I mean? That TV-friendly face. He's our guy, and we love having him on the Beltway Blitz. So, there you go. The latest on a possible D.C. site for the Commanders. Chase Young, not at practice again today. Two straight days. We're not going to get into should he be there. What do you think of him not being there? But I do want to pose the question, is there a link between him not achieving what he was supposed to on the field so far and his lack of involvement in off seasons? Why has he underachieved, in your opinion, to this point? That'll be the question next on Grant and Danny.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.
Well, you always would like to have all your guys here, but again, it's volunteering. We understand that. And the nice thing, though, is, I've been in contact with them. They're working out. They're getting, they're progressing, getting themselves ready to go. And, when it all comes down to it, we'll see them when they have to be here.
Ron Rivera on Chase Young and Montez Sweat. Grant and Danny, welcome back. This is The Fan. By the way, Celtics winners last night, 116-99 over the Heat. They finally looked like the Boston team we thought they would be.
That's who I thought they would be.
4 games into the series, they're down 3-1. Although the betting markets seem to be giving them a chance. It's not like they're favored to win the series or anything crazy. But you would think it would be way more lopsided in Miami's favor than it is. Mm-hmm. Kind of odd. But 17-point win last night. And Jason Tatum's offseason, or excuse me, postseason's been incredible. His offseason will start really soon, probably. But Tatum, 33-11-7 last night. It was great. Fantastic performance. That was the 6th time in these playoffs for Jason Tatum that he's gone 30-10-5 in a game. Only 2018 LeBron has ever had more games like that in a postseason.
Mm.
He had 7. But yet, I say that, and I think when you hear Jason Tatum's name this week, you think about not the 50-point performance to get him into this round, but how small he came up late in a couple of games to go down 0-3.
Without question. And the turnover numbers are there, and you're basically now kind of watching him, everyone sort of standing around going, okay, do the Superman thing. He did it against Philadelphia, so it works. I mean, he hit a couple of back-breaking shots and, the 51 points in a closeout game, and, he's a star. But all of a sudden, once some of these other guys have kind of come up small, whether it's Marcus Smart, Derek White, Jaylen Brown has shot terribly, especially in this postseason, all of a sudden, if you're one guy, your best, your ace can't do it, now you look kind of lost. Last night, that looked like the Boston team that I thought was going to maybe win the whole damn thing, right? Everybody looked so comfortable. Role players on the road, knocking down step-back threes, fadeaways, everybody catch and shoot, creating space, hounding people on defense, making it difficult. I thought that was the team we were going to see.
That was one of the two big playoff games last night. The other in the NHL, the Golden Knights beat the Stars 4-0, take a 3-0 series lead. So this now is, we've talked about how this had begun, but the first time ever, all 4 conference finals, NBA, NHL, saw 3-0 series leads for
crazy.
The teams that are likely to go on here. 3 of the 4 series could end up still with sweeps, Boston being the only team to salvage a Game 4 win. But first time that's happened, pretty amazing. And for Vegas, they got to the Cup and obviously lost in their infancy when the Capitals knocked them off in the Stanley Cup back in 2018. And they're back to knocking on the door. Having been out there and having enjoyed my time around those fans for the most part, I think I'll be rooting for them if they get to the Stanley Cup
final. I wonder
final.
How I'll feel. That's actually a great question.
Well, for some reason, you hated them, I remember.
Yeah, well, most I hated Ryan Reeves. The fans, I was thrilled for.
No, because remember, you hated them. Your argument at the time was they haven't had to go through what you have. They don't know how good
they
have.
Yeah, I resent it.
Right.
Yeah.
So you, like, despise them. And I remember thinking, but they're so nice, and everyone's just happy to be here, and everyone's so friendly
torn.
To us. But you just couldn't stand them.
I was Natalie Imbruglia about it. I mean, again, I was the fans, I thought it was amazing. The level of support, because, as you know, when we're out there, what are you going to Vegas for? You're going because it's like a playground.
Not
it's a
hockey.
It's a grown-up playground. You're going to spend a bunch of money, make a stupid decision, get drunk in public, eat at a buffet, whatever. You show up and you leave. Every jerk around the country is doing the same thing. So when people do that enough to your town, you kind of like, it's hard to, you know, you need something of your own. And these sports teams that they've got, they've embraced these things so wholeheartedly. So the support I was thrilled with. But I'm basically like, you need 40 years of suffering and heartbreak. And then you're allowed to, like, enjoy some of this. That's how I felt.
You want to know why you should never bet on baseball?
Okay.
The Tampa Bay Rays lost to the Toronto Blue Jays last night, 20-1.
Uh-huh.
The Rays are the best team in the sport.
Yeah, they're great.
They never lose. They lost by 19 runs last night. And at one point, they had a position player playing who threw a 52-mile-an-hour pitch that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit for a grand slam. That's why you should never bet on baseball.
Mm.
It's just too unpredictable day in and day out. The beauty of the game is over 162, you can predict some things.
Yes.
So if you want to do a futures bet on a division champion, that's hard enough to do, whatever. But over 6 months, things kind of even out. Somewhat predictable.
Individual night, man.
Any one night, any nine innings, like, you're going to the game last night to see Juan Soto back in D.C. against Mackenzie Gore, and it's Washington, and it's San Diego. You just have no idea. On paper today, Padres against the Nats, Trevor Williams on the hill. You might lean San Diego. The Nats could win that game 9-1. Like, there's just absolutely no way to predict day in and day out. You could say that about a lot of sports. I definitely feel that way about the NBA, where, like, great teams lose to bad teams because you find out 3 minutes before the game three guys aren't playing, and or they are and they just don't care that night and they were out late.
Yeah, last game of a road trip. Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, Oakland is wretched. They got 10 wins. I mean, they're 10-40. But, like, you know, every once in a while, they'll play great. They'll look like a major league team.
My bit that I like to do with baseball is I like to bet on first five innings. You could do that where you're like, this team will have a lead. And I look at dominant starting pitcher going, assuming they've pitched well, like, their team should be up by a run after five innings. And you can kind of bet little specific things like that, or live betting on over-under or something. But just going into a game saying, oh, yeah, the Nationals will definitely lose this, or the Blue Jays against the Rays, there's just no way to know, man. Toronto had lost like 13 in a row going into this series, I think.
Came in scuffling.
Something like that. All right, you heard Ron Rivera on the way into the segment. No Chase Young, no Montez Sweat at practice again today. They are skipping workouts this week. We're not going to get back into the should Chase Young be there conversation. But here is what I want to ask, and here is what I want you guys to discuss with us on the phones. We have not given you much of a chance to call in today. We haven't really had many call topics or a lot of time, but we can do that now at 800-636-1067. Do you think there is a correlation between Chase Young not being at OTAs more often than not in his career, Chase Young not rehabbing at the facility when he rehabbed away last year and then the recovery took forever, and Chase Young being a disappointment so far from a production standpoint? Yes or no? In other words, if you don't have a big deal with him not showing up, that is your prerogative. Mm-hmm. We could disagree on that. Like, there's no right answer there. I'm not even saying that he would definitely have more sacks and be more productive this year if he showed up. I don't think there's any way to prove that or know that. I think there's a right way and a wrong way to go about your business. I think there's a good process and a bad process. And so I just kind of, as a process over results guy, like, stick to what I believe is the right way to do things and go about trying to become T.J. Watt, who, by the way, opted into voluntary workouts today and was at the facility as a guy who 2 years ago had 22.5 sacks and won the Defensive Player of the Year award when he didn't have to be there today. A defense he knows really well, he just chose to be. But is there a connection between his opt-in and his performance or not? That's the question, 800-636-1067.
Yes. Now, what people are going to hear is me say, yes, there's a connection, and roll their eyes like an individual drill in May translates 100% to, you know, 10 sacks in the fall. And that's not what it is. This is attitudinal. for me. The sense that I've gotten, and I've, you know, never spoken to him, I don't know him, but the sense reading what I've read, listening to the people that I've listened to, including the coaching staff and others, has basically been a sense of someone that has believed from the word go that he has arrived. And you all know what I mean when I say that. You know when someone thinks that they've accomplished it, they've done it, they are at the peak of their powers. They're it, right? Really nice rookie year. The idea then that there's nothing left to do. You're at the top of this profession because you're the celebrity. You're the guy that's on the brochure. You're the guy that's on the poster. You're the guy that's printed on game one tickets. Because of that feeling, there has always been this air to me of someone that doesn't think they need this. That's at the core of the issue to me. Somebody that nobody's been able to get to him and say, you don't have pass rush moves. Your moves, whatever they are not effective. You have to add. He hasn't done that. The proof has been in the pudding. Where are the moves? Where are the advanced technique things? Where are all the different things that it looks like when a guy comes around the edge? Where's my Von Miller ghost shoulder? Where's my rip? Where's my Dwight Freeney spin? Where are all the things that the great pass rushers continue to add to their game for this guy? Now, you want to blame the injury? That's fine. You don't add as much in a year where you're trying to just get your knee back to 100% so you can run again. The year before was right there, right in front of you. The time when you need to be in the lab, you're not. You're capitalizing on your fame. He's always believed to me that because he was the number two pick, because he was huge at Ohio State, he was Mr. Buckeye on campus, better than every Bosa, all the hype and everything else. It's basically been your work is done. Doesn't mean he doesn't lift or run or do all those other kind of things. But these elements of being with your teammates, of leading, being there when nobody else really cares or is around, are emblematic of somebody that thinks they don't need it. And my contention to him is, you 100% do.
So I think the biggest reason why Chase Young has underperformed is his injury and the torn ACL that cost him 22 of the last 34 games. Because I think if he's the more he plays, I think the more he's going to produce. And frankly, if he would have finished two seasons ago, I think he would have ascended. Wouldn't have been the year that we wanted or expected, but he would have been better than he was in the first half. I do believe that. I think if he would have played last year, healthy football, all season long, he would have had some success. He would have gotten to 7 sacks or whatever. I still think it would be, again, a disappointment compared to the hype. And let's set aside the hype. Who cares? A disappointment compared to what you expect and want out of an early draft pick in the top 5. But I'm going to say injury is number one for the last 2 years having been a disaster. Outside of that, though, I think there is a huge correlation to just opt-in. Opt-in shows desperation and hunger and want to, and you just can't convince me that those two things aren't linked. Now, it doesn't mean that if you don't come, you can't be good. That's not the same thing. In other words, Trent Williams routinely wouldn't come to this kind of stuff and would kick people's butts for 60 minutes on Sundays. Charles Leno is not there. I don't think it'll affect his play. Montez Sweat is not there. I don't think it means he's not going to be a good defensive end, right? There is a difference. I'm not saying that because he's not here, Chase Young is not going to be as good. I don't know. But if you're asking me, is there something symbolic about this person who has routinely done this in his career? This isn't a one-off. This is the norm for him. And him so far under-delivering, I think the answer is yes. And that is a problem for me. So if you guys are pro Chase Young backers, everyone like me who asks questions about him and has been disappointed are haters, though, that's fine. Like, we can disagree. That's reasonable. I think it's a good conversation to have. Should he be there? Does he need to be there? Does he get anything out of being there? We can go back and forth on that. But I do want to know if you guys think not coming to workouts in the offseason 2 years ago, not coming to workouts now, not rehabbing like every other player I've ever heard of coming off of a torn ACL has the facility. Is that revealing or telling in a way that is problematic or not? That's my question. 800-636-1067. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Well, just, you know, from what I've gotten in our text messages and conversations, just, hey, he gets it, he understands, and he's going to go out, and I really believe he's going to come in and give us everything he's got. I don't disagree with Jack's message that, you know, when I believe Julie Donaldson was interviewing him, and he came out and said, you know, this is about production-based business, and you have to produce. And if you want to look at a great example, that's what Deron did. You know, our intent is to keep our guys that produce for us. We want them to be around, want them to be part of what we're doing. And, you know, so that's pretty much just been the message. And I believe he's adapted to it very nicely, and he's working hard. You know, I'll be excited to see him when he has to be here. So, again, he's been on top of things.
Ron Rivera meeting with reporters today in Ashburn. The Commanders back to work, practicing, most of them. Three guys were not there today: Charles Leno, Montez Sweat, and Chase Young. Leno, who you would think, well, it's a new offense, he should probably be there. Veteran, hadn't missed barely a snap last couple of years, was in this same offense when Matt Nagy, who coached under Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City, was in Chicago, and Leno was there. So he knows the scheme pretty well already. Sweat, established defensive end. We kind of know what he is. You hope there's a little more ceiling and he can still tap into some untapped potential and go from like an 8, 8, 8.5, 9 sack guy to 12 or 13 and give you that Kerrigan-level production. But for the moment, you got a pretty good beat on the fact that you got a good defensive end. And then Young coming off of them not picking up the option and back-to-back seasons where because of an injury mostly and also because of just struggles when he's been on the field has not been the guy they drafted him to be. Yesterday, we talked a lot about what it meant that he wasn't at practice and whether or not he should be. Leave that in the rearview mirror for now. The question at 800-636-1067 for you guys right now on the MGM National Harbor listener lines, some lines open, 800-636-1067, is do you think there's a correlation between the hard time he's had excelling and the opt-in to optional things, like where he's rehabbed or, in this case, again, whether you go to practice or not in May with your teammates when almost everyone else on the team has elected to? That's the question I've got specifically for the people, too, that don't have an issue with him not being there. Because I'm not screaming at you. I'm not telling you you're wrong. We disagree on this. We can disagree on whether apples taste good or not. What do you like better, red or green? Like, that's okay to disagree. I do want to know, though, do you think that this has nothing to do with the last 12 games he's played in, him having like a sack and a half and like 3 tackles for loss? Or do you think those two things are coincidental?
Yeah, to me, there's a correlation. And again, it's not if you have a great rep in May, it means you're a Hall of Famer come the fall. Sam Howell throws an incomplete pass, doesn't mean he sucks. If he goes 10 for 10 and 7 on 7, doesn't solve everything. Doesn't mean Ron Rivera is going to manage the clock well. None of that stuff. It's emblematic, though, right, of somebody that doesn't think he needs this. Trent Williams didn't need it because he was out, you know, doing stuff, running circles around running backs at his private workouts, and he would come out and kick everybody's butt. Chase Young hasn't done that. He had a really nice rookie season. He was Mr. Ohio State. He believes, just seems to be from the outside looking in, that he doesn't need this, and the reality is he does.
Let's go to John in Shirlington, where there's a Best Buns location. I thoroughly enjoy their breakfast sandwiches. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. I think there's a correlation. You know, whether it's injury, whether it's performance, he obviously is not adapted to the professional attitude, I think, and maybe the not being picked up the options affecting that. And then, but, you know, he's not happy there, and he's got to get that hunger, right? He's got to be hungry for what he's getting after. I think maybe the challenge of being in the NFL as opposed to college, but it's all related. It's perspective on what his job is and what he's supposed to be doing. And I think there's maybe a disagreement about what the expectations of him are from the team and what his own expectations for his contribution.
Thank you, buddy.
It's well put, bud.
He said something interesting that appeals to me there. He talked about, you know, the opt-in. How about this? Do you think his lack of involvement, when it's optional, or what we'll call his opt-in, the things he doesn't have to be at, was a factor in the team not picking up his fifth-year option? I really want to know the answer to that. I mean, if you don't think this is a big deal, cool. Do you believe that when the Marty Party and Rivera sat there and decided what they were going to do, And they talked long and hard about Chase Young and how it would look if they didn't pick up the option. Pretty unprecedented. Number two overall pick. We're going to look like dummies. This is not going to help us keep this guy on the roster long term. We're making a big decision in terms of the long-term relationship with Chase. We're taking a big risk if he breaks out. Do you think it came up that he's not all the way in all the time? If he was at everything, if he was in the building, if he had the pom-poms on and was kind of like the pro, the team leader all offseason long.
Like John Allen is.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it. Because I'm doing my best. I think he cares. I think he's invested. I think he works his butt off wherever he trains. I'm not assaulting his character. But yeah, if he was John Allen, if he cared a lot about being around the Commanders in May or whatever, and he had always done all that, but he got hurt and the numbers weren't there, would they have picked up his option? Is that a factor at all in the decision that they have been around him for 3 years and seen he shows up when he has to, not when he doesn't? Scott, Silver Spring, how are you?
Hey, fellas, how you guys doing?
Hey, buddy.
I agree. I mean, I think there's correlation. And, I mean, his rookie year, I believe he came in, he participated in everything, he did everything. He had a great year, and that's part of what the reason they made him a captain. And then second year, what the comment was, he was going to get the bag or whatever it was. And let me tell you, I'm a big Chase Young fan. I love the guy. I hope he comes out and gets 16 sacks. I hope we sign him to a long-term deal. But I believe the way – I mean, this has to have something to do with it. And I'd also like to say that I wonder what his teammates think. I mean, your Terry McLaurin, your other guys that have been performing at the at top level the whole time, when they're there, John Allen, you know, what do they think? How does this make them feel about him?
It's hard to know, Scott, how they feel behind the scenes. We know what they say publicly. Most of them just kind of take the high road and take his back. And maybe they do feel that way. I mean, players can understand other players not showing up at things, I think, more than the average fan does. In fact, John Allen today spoke about Chase Young. We could play the clip next segment for people. But he basically said, look, football's a great game. It's a terrible business. When I was going through my own thing trying to get a contract, I wasn't here either. I understand that it's an ugly business. And the problem with that logic is, while I thought it was a great answer, as most of John Allen's answers are.
Indeed.
Chase Young is not, quote-unquote, trying to get a contract right now. There is no negotiation going on. The negotiation is over for the moment. They didn't pick up his option.
Mm-hmm.
John Allen didn't show up because they were negotiating, and it was a way to get some leverage to say, I'll be back in the building as soon as you pay me. And they couldn't agree on the terms just yet. They did right before training camp, if you remember, in July.
That's right.
And so he showed up. So it's really not apples to apples or analogous necessarily. Montez Sweat is a better example. Sweat's going into a contract year and wants a contract that they haven't given him yet. He might not be there because he wants to be paid. So that's his leverage. That's not what Chase Young's doing because they literally just had an opportunity to pay him for next season, and they said, we're not going to do that. They're not now trying to sign him. There is no chance
it's not a negotiation
of
moment,
a deal
yeah.
coming before the season starts that would affect whether or not he's here. Do you guys think that Young has been hindered at all by some of the things he's chosen not to do in the offseason as a performer in his career? Yes or no? 800-636-1067. And do you think that the staff, when they made the decision not to pick up his option, took any of his interest in being around the team in the offseason into account? Did it come back to bite him in some way? That's a question on Grant and Danny. I know you got to run.
Yes.
Have yourself an enjoyable evening.
I'll see you tomorrow, my friend.
You are listening to The Fan. Those calls coming your way and those thoughts coming your way next on G&D. Ben Standig at 6 o'clock. Plus, as the show continues, we do have tickets to Live Golf for you right here on The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
T-Mobile
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.